Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, Mike Simpson from KNX News. I do the morning show. You're about to hear another one of my profiles of somebody who's running for governor. But the idea with these, if you've heard them before, is to try and get away from the talking points and just sit down and talk. So instead of the studio, we went to a restaurant, Descanso, in the Mid-Wilshire area, and we grabbed some beers. Today, it's a Democrat who holds statewide office right now, Tony Thurmond.
Ready. Welcome in.
Cheers.
Thanks for doing this.
Salud.
Tony Thurmond's the state superintendent, so he's in the news occasionally, but you may remember he was in it in a pretty big way when there were calls to thin out the field, the number of Democrats. Here's what he said when that was happening.
The California Democratic Party is essentially telling every candidate of color in the race for governor to drop out.
So that's where I wanted to start when we sat down for our beers.
Well, when's the last time we let a poll decide the outcome of an election? Last time I checked, voters, they make the decision about an election, and so, you know, polls are like anything else. They're just data points, right? They give you some sense of the people who were polled, what they think, and you hope you can replicate it. But look, I don't think that the chair of the party is a racist, but the outcome of his action would be to essentially tell the candidates of color to drop out of the race. Why should any of us drop out of the race? As someone who's been elected twice statewide, I received 5 million votes. You know, even when $30 million got spent against my first campaign in 2019, you know, campaigns don't survive that, but mine did. And I won in all the major regions of this state. I won in Los Angeles, even though I was running against San Angelino. I won in Northern California. And when I was reelected with the highest percentage of any statewide officer, higher than even Governor Newsom. I want the voters to decide if I'm worthy of their vote or not. Yeah. I literally was on my way to file when the text message came through. Yeah. Quite frankly, I think if you're going to have a conversation with someone like that, you should have that conversation. Don't send them a text message or an email. And if the party wanted to consolidate, I feel like that should have happened months ago.
I'll note here that this was recorded before Eric Swalwell dropped out of the race after the sexual misconduct allegations. It was also recorded at a time when teachers here in L.A. were in contract talks. And I wanted to talk about education. It's in his title. There are still more than half of the kids in this state struggling with the basics. And it's been years since COVID.
Well, there's no question that we have to do more to help kids in California do better. If you look at the results that our kids are getting, they match the results in every other state, by the way, from the pandemic. The whole world is still trying to recover. For me, it starts longer than that. Look, I'm 57 years old. My whole life, people have been talking about closing the achievement gap. You can't tell me that we can send the person to the moon and we can't close the achievement gap.
It took a lot of math to send them to the moon.
Exactly. And so that tells me that there's more that we need to do. When I came to this office, our kids were even further behind. They've made some modest progress. But it's not enough. We need to go even further. And for those reasons, I've launched a plan, a five-year plan, to make sure every child learns to read by third grade. California's never had a multi-year, long-term plan to do this. Other states have. Mississippi and Tennessee. No disrespect to those states, but I think California can do better.
When it comes to unions, one of my questions was, can they sometimes have too much power? Did they stand in the way of changes that might need to be made?
Nobody wants to see schools close, but if enrollment keeps declining, where are you going to find the cash, especially when it comes time to negotiate and they want to raise?
Well, I can tell you that while I'm honored to be supported by unions, that when I have to make a tough decision, I make that regardless of whoever supports it. And I can point to many other times when I've gone in the other direction. You know, I think unions do a great job of protecting their members who otherwise would struggle to get good pay. And they advocate for really great programs like community schools, which means that kids get mental health and health care and things through school that they wouldn't otherwise have that become a barrier to our kids. Everything takes balance. No one group should have the authority to make the decision, but unions certainly should have a seat at the table to be in the conversation.
When it comes to teachers themselves, we had a story on the air here that upwards of 50% were kind of just eyeing retirement already, waiting for the point where they could get there because they were burned out. So I wanted to know, what do we do with that kind of a situation? I mean, you couldn't pay me enough to deal with kids all day.
And we don't pay them enough, right? That's the reality. I spend a lot of time in classrooms and on school visits, and it's actually the part of the job that I love the most. But as I often say to people like school board members, they have the hardest job in elected politics because no one shows up unless the house is on fire or there's a school closure or you're laying people off. And even when good decisions are being made, the chambers are empty. And that's because education is so hard and so complicated. And we do have to fund our schools more. We do have to have smaller class sizes. These are things that are proven to make a difference for student performance. Our teachers and staff need more professional development. They need better pay. Many of them are traveling long distances to get to work. That's why I have been working on teacher housing probably for the last decade. And right now we're working on building 2 million housing units specifically for educators who have to travel far to get to work. They can't afford to live where they work. So until we can pay them better, let's give them some affordable housing.
We need more housing, but we also need the ability to insure those homes. And that's one area where he says this last governor could have done more.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest. I've always been a fan of the governor. I've known him for over 20 years. We've supported each other in just about every race that we've ever had. I'll tell you what I like about the governor first. He takes chances. He pushes the envelope. And he's a hands-on governor. You know, since 2019, when I took this office, we've lived in an era where there's so many wildfires and natural disasters, and he is a hands-on, front row, very present governor. And I respect that about him. I would point to that one thing that I think that the governor could play a bigger role after the Eaton fire and the Palisades fire in dealing with the homeowners insurance industry. I just think it's criminal that the insurance industry has taken premiums from Californians for years, and then in the biggest moment of need in our state, they've said, sorry, we can't help you, or we won't write policies for you. And I just think that the governor plays an outside role in any industry that wants to do business here, and that the governor can say to them, hey, you need to do more.
But if you mandate coverage in high-risk areas, they could say, sure, I'll hike all the premiums.
Well, I think what they should do is say, listen, you don't get a rate increase unless you're writing policies. We don't have to mandate anything. But right now, after those fires, they got a rate increase. And so to me, it's like, why should you be rewarded when you didn't insure the people who needed the most help, or when you walked away from them? Insurance companies flat out just said no. Now, there are things that we can do differently in this state. Californians, we have to harden our homes. We have to be prepared for more likelihood of high winds. We have to make sure that utilities completely underground. But I think as a state, the state needs to give some education and incentives to homeowners to harden their homes and make sure we have planned burns, and we're doing everything that we can. But I have a bone to pick with the homeowners insurance industry, and I think that the governor could have had more influence there.
And finally, to end here, kind of back to my premise about trying at least to get along or find some agreements, how would a Governor Thurmond do on the phone with President Trump?
I think it's a very unique balance. On one hand, there are times when you have to push back against this president and the administration, right? And I've done this. The president illegally impounded $6 billion from California schools, and I've had to use the courts in other ways, and we got all that money back. But then there are times when you have to work with the president in Congress. And
here's the president.
Right? He is the president. And here's the example. FEMA. We have to have relief for our communities who are impacted by fire and flood. And so it's an unusual dance, but we have to work with the president at times. We have to work with the Republican majority. But at the same time, I'm committed to doing everything I can to flip Congress and to have elected members in Congress who are not going to say, oh, sorry, we're not going to send money to California. But here's the thing. They're not just withholding FEMA dollars from California. They're withholding money from other parts of the state that have had hurricanes and tornadoes, many of which are red areas. Who are they serving? They're not even serving their own constituents. And so I just think that's reckless, and we need to have leaders in government who get that our bottom line is serving the people. We raise our right hand and we take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution. That means that we're here to serve the people, regardless of party. And as governor, I'll serve everyone. Democrats, Republicans, independents, the client estate,
will do what's best for the people, because the issues that we need help on aren't partisan issues. They are quality of life issues. We've got to address homelessness. We have to build more housing. We have to make sure that people can get good paying jobs. Those are the things that I'm committed, and people can be safe in their communities. Those are the things I'm committed to doing as governor.
Thanks for having a drink with me.
I'm glad to do it. Let's do it again.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.